is a day where there are primary or caucuses where candidates are vying for presidential nomination.
Primaries are a big stepping off point for campaigns. We don't really take part, but we always keep an eye on what's going on.
Everything a campaign does is generating data.
If you don't have the strongest grasp on that data, you are sticking your finger in the wind, hoping and praying for the best.
Technology has become the backbone of data analytics, which is really what the modern campaign is all about.
Our team lies underneath the civic and tech engagement part of Microsoft.
We engage with the partners and help them build solutions on our platform.
We needed better reports, and we needed a way to visualize our data in a simplified manner.
We landed on Microsoft Power BI to help us display all of our information.
And I think it's going to revolutionize our reporting and dashboarding.
At the DNC, we have a tool called LBJ that helps us assign our volunteers to polling locations, record incidents.
The DNC used Microsoft Dynamics to quickly spin up something that can be very useful and effective in the field.
Campaigns tend to be very spiky in terms of their activity, and that's a really good use case for using Azure to scale that up very quickly.
As well as improve reliability for our clients, it's running in Azure, we have a backup, we're good to go.
Microsoft realized that they needed to go to the people on the campaigns who would help implement the technology that they were talking about and envisioning.
We have few programs where we engage with the partners early on. We call it private previews. They can access the technology which is not yet in market.
Campaign Command Center lets us communicate in practically real time. They don't want to hear about statistical regression models that we build. They just want to know what's happening and what can we do in order to improve it.
Microsoft has a very strong commitment to corporate citizenship.
We want to ensure that elections are open and fair and accessible.
Our goal should be to empower everyone, not only the people who are running for office, but the people who want to participate in the process.
Feeling like you're living in the shadow of your former self? Don't have the cores to scale with your buddies, and your throughput is on its way down? You might not be getting slower. You might simply have a treatable condition called low scalability, or low S. If you're a developer or work in IT and aren't leveraging the Windows Azure Cloud Platform, you might be a victim of low S. So talk to Windows Azure about getting out from under the shadow of low S. The choice is yours. Start small, go big, develop, scale, test. Potential side effects of achieving high S with Windows Azure may include raises, promotions, and bonuses you've always wanted. Developers who get seasick or allergic to grass should think hard before using Azure, as invitations to the corporate yacht and country club are likely. Hand cramping from signing autographs may occur in rare occasions, but is usually mild and will go away with regular coding. So get going with Windows Azure today. It's time to leave the world of low S behind, once and for all. Do you have friends also suffering from low S? Share this video so they too can see the benefits of Windows Azure.
We are beginning a journey, and at this moment, we are bound by nothing. Technology empowers us to achieve more. It pushes us to go further.
To keep track of almost 5 million athletes in 170 countries, you need a lot of data. Up till now, we've been tracking a lot of that data manually. The Microsoft Cloud allows us to immediately be able to access information wherever we are. Information for an athlete's medical care, or information to track their personal best. Special Olympics is really about celebrating differences, to create a world where we can accept and appreciate the gifts that we all bring to our communities.
Technology is the tool to make an impact. It is the tool to make a difference.
With Microsoft Cloud, we save millions of man hours. And that's time we can invest in our athletes, our work, and changing the world.
DocuSign's mission is to make business digital. We help organizations build end-to-end transaction processing that's entirely digital, that has no paper involved, no fax machines, no filing cabinets. More than half of the agreements signed with DocuSign are completed within an hour, and more than 80% are completed within a day. I remember when I bought my home, I was buying groceries and getting things done on the go. I signed those agreements while I was in line at the supermarket. We in part got the deal done because we simply got it done faster than everybody else. Customers choose DocuSign because they trust DocuSign. And we picked Microsoft because we trust Microsoft to deliver secure software for our environment. As you probably expect, banks are incredibly trust conscious. In financial services, 10 of the 15 largest banks in the United States are DocuSign customers, and over 1,000 credit unions use us every day. And 13 of the 15 largest insurance carriers in the United States are DocuSign customers. We picked SQL Server as our platform because, frankly, we trust it. We facilitate customers extracting data from our core platform and putting it into systems like Power BI so they can do end-to-end analytics of their entire customer experience. It's very hard for me to imagine another partnership quite like the Microsoft DocuSign partnership. We're partnering with Microsoft to bring the DocuSign platform to users all around the world.
In today's highly regulated environment, data security is a major concern for businesses. Data breaches often involve the theft of credit card numbers or employee and customer identities. This leads to loss of business, reputation, and potentially costly lawsuits. With this in mind, businesses rightly worry about protecting their assets. Encryption solutions in today's market have several drawbacks. They're complex, costly, require custom development, ongoing maintenance, and impact system performance. Further, they don't encrypt data while in use, when it's most susceptible to attacks. Introducing Always Encrypted in Microsoft SQL Server 2016. Always Encrypted is an industry-first technology that protects data at rest, while in use, and when processing queries. Only your application and authorized users have the decryption key. That means that no one, not even those with administrative access, can see your data. Always Encrypted is not only safer, it's simple and transparent. It's ready to be deployed right out of the box, requires only minimal changes to your applications, and is designed for optimal performance. SQL Server has been the enterprise database with the fewest security vulnerabilities 6 years running. Always Encrypted in SQL Server 2016 is a critical addition to your data security strategy, so you can be sure that your sensitive data stays safe, always. Follow the link to learn how Always Encrypted from SQL Server 2016 takes data security to the next level. In today's business environment, data-driven decision-making is critical for success. Increasingly, businesses are using data science and advanced analytics to build mission-critical intelligent applications with the popular open-source language R. But it's not easy. Scale is limited to a single processor. Datasets must fully fit in memory. And integrating with applications is hard. It gets even more complicated and costly as data volume grows, and, most importantly, data movement poses huge security risks. Introducing R Services in Microsoft SQL Server 2016. R Services provides dozens of R functions out of the box, with full support for parallel and streaming processing. This removes the bottlenecks of a single processor and data size limited to memory. By allowing secure execution of R scripts on the same machine as SQL Server, R Services eliminates data movement and mitigates security risks. R scripts can be executed with standard T-SQL that developers already know, helping them build intelligence into existing applications, all transparent to end users. Follow the link to learn how R Services in SQL Server 2016 helps businesses use the power of the R language to unlock insights hidden in their data.
Day is a day where there are primary or caucuses where candidates are vying for presidential nomination.
Primaries are a big stepping off point for campaigns. We don't really take part, but we always keep an eye on what's going on.
Everything a campaign does is generating data.
If you don't have the strongest grasp on that data, you are sticking your finger in the wind, hoping and praying for the best.
Technology has become the backbone of data analytics, which is really what the modern campaign is all about.
Our team lies underneath the civic and tech engagement part of Microsoft.
We engage with the partners and help them build solutions on our platform.
We needed better reports, and we needed a way to visualize our data in a simplified manner.
We landed on Microsoft Power BI to help us display all of our information.
And I think it's going to revolutionize our reporting and dashboarding.
At the DNC, we have a tool called LBJ that helps us assign our volunteers to polling locations, record incidents.
The DNC uses Microsoft Dynamics to quickly spin up something that can be very useful and effective in the field.
Campaigns tend to be very spiky in terms of their activity, and that's a really good use case for using Azure to scale that up very quickly.
As well as improve reliability for our clients, it's running in Azure. We have a backup. We're good to go.
Microsoft realized that they needed to go to the people on the campaigns who would help implement the technology that they were talking about envisioning.
We have few programs where we engage with the partners early on. We call it private previews. They can access the technology which is not yet in market.
Campaign Command Center lets us communicate in practically real time. They don't want to hear about statistical regression models that we build. They just want to know what's happening and what can we do in order to improve it.
Microsoft has a very strong commitment to corporate citizenship.
We want to ensure that elections are open and fair and accessible.
Our goal should be to empower everyone, not only the people who are running for office, but the people who want to participate in the process.
Feeling like you're living in the shadow of your former self? Don't have the cores to scale with your buddies, and your throughput is on its way down? You might not be getting slower. You might simply have a treatable condition called low scalability, or low S. If you're a developer or work in IT and aren't leveraging the Windows Azure Cloud Platform, you might be a victim of low S. So talk to Windows.
The timer. Good morning, and welcome to this week's MTC Studio broadcast. My name is Dean Suzuki, and I'm your host today. Today we'll be talking about the modern data platform, and to illustrate these capabilities and concepts, we're taking you through a scenario of a fictitious company called Contoso. Last week, my colleague Kat began the story by talking about the capabilities with the modern meetings, where she illustrated the scenario where we're taking to market a new drug line, and as part of that, we had a webcast hosted by our Skype meeting broadcast technology. This week, we'll look at the data from the results of that webcast and also our sales data based upon our product. So we're going to use that as a scenario, as a backdrop, to illustrate the capabilities of our modern data platform. And today, to help me with this, to illustrate this, I've asked my colleague Kevin Orbaker to join the show. Kevin, welcome.
Thanks, Dean. Thanks for having me.
How are you doing today, Kev?
Brilliant, as always. Yes.
That's great. So why don't you go ahead and take us through the modern data platform story today?
Sure.
Before we jump into that, let me just make a quick comment. If you have any questions throughout the show, please go ahead and We'll be monitoring the Q&A window, so I'll be watching that, and I'll raise it up to my colleague, Kevin. But going back to you, Kev, thanks.
No problem. So I'm excited today to talk about our modern data platform and what it means for organizations and what really a modern data platform is. You know, we talk about data every day in our organizations. Data is probably our number one concern. As a matter of fact, IDC and Gartner and Forrester always place data as the biggest factor in organizations when it comes to being able to plan for the future, to be able to grow, and to meet industry and market demands. One of the predictions that we have right now, it's fairly recent, but pretty big, is the fact that organizations right now are looking at about, in 2020, about a total of, I think the number is 40 zettabytes of data around the globe. Just to put that in perspective, 40 zettabytes. It's a hard number to understand, but every grain of sand on every beach, on every ocean, in every location on the planet is not 40 zettabytes of grains of sand. So it's just a massive amount of data that we're accumulating. And you know, we need to meet those challenges. So how do we meet those challenges? Well, the Microsoft Data Platform is really there to help you get there. And when we look at our data platform, you'll see that there are a number of things that we provide. And they really focus around this concept of transforming your data and analyzing it, visualizing it, and also capturing it. We're going to focus heavily today on the capturing part and understanding how our modern data platform allows you to capture and aggregate that data in a way that makes sense, that's scalable, and meets your time to market requirements without having the traditional let's say the IT lag of being able to bring data and new technologies to market. Most of you in your organizations probably focus today around virtual machines or physical machines in your environment. One of the things we need to understand with the VM paradigm is that there's a lot that you have to take care of, from OS patching, database patching, backup, recovery, restore, durability, high availability, and scaling. These are all challenges that you face every day. The reason why that's a challenge is because you're dealing with managing that aspect when at the end of the day you're really only focused on, or you should be only focused on, app optimization and data analysis. To get there, one of the things that Microsoft has provided, and one of the things that we provide in our stack, is using PaaS to deliver these data platforms eliminates or reduces the need for you to worry about patching and service updates and downtime, and even disaster recovery and high availability. When we look at PaaS, when we look at moving your data platform to a modern data platform, not only do you eliminate these requirements, not only do you get rid of having to worry about and be concerned about HA and DR and scaling, but you also get a return on investment that you just can't get with virtual machines and IaaS, or what we call IaaS today.
Hey, Kevin?
Yes, sir.
Can you clarify, what is that acronym, PaaS, for the maybe?
Sure,
audience?
Absolutely. So in Azure and most cloud services, we really have two primary, or there's three, but there's two primary platforms that we use. The first one is IaaS, or Infrastructure as a Service. That is typically your data center today, maybe lifting and shifting your what you do today into another data center like Azure. And continuing on with the same pattern of management that you have today, where you're managing the operating system, you're managing service packs, updates, recovery, backup, restores, etc. Whereas PaaS, or Platform as a Service, really reduces or eliminates all of those traditional IaaS or virtual machine requirements to be able to make it useful in your environment.
Gotcha.
So when we look at PaaS and we look at the modern data platform, we start to look at just how it affects you. when you build applications, they need to talk to data. We all know that data is the key to organizations and being able to get data accurately in a timely fashion, and the data that you need is important. We usually start with your traditional data, which is SQL Server or a SQL database. Those have been around now for 40 plus years. They've been a staple of all organizations and are still probably the primary data storage and transaction system used in your organizations. But we really start to look at, in a modern data platform, leveraging not just your traditional transactional databases, but also leveraging your NoSQL or, let's say, JSON, schemaless, let's put it that way, schemaless databases. We start looking at table storage, which allows you to take data that maybe just key value pair or something very simple and leverage a very scalable, very high availability platform to be able to keep and track data in that format. And then we start looking at other technologies, newer technologies around big data or Hadoop or data lake, and then leveraging things such as machine learning and data streaming analytics to get real-time insights to that data. And to do that, we really need to look at the modern data platform. Now, before I get too far, I'd like to kind of highlight just how data affects your organizations today. Most organizations today, according to Gartner, are going to go through a period of explosive data growth. To illustrate that, I just want to kind of point this out because it makes it really simple. If we were to look at data on a timeline for your organization, today, let's say you have 1 terabyte of data in your organization. Well, Gartner and many other leading organizations believe that within 3 to 5 years, you will see about a 10 times growth in your data. So that 1 terabyte of data in the next 3 to 5 years will grow to 10 terabytes. Now, one of the challenges with a growth of data like that is dealing with that much data. The question is in 3 to 5 years, if you have 10 times the data, does your hardware scale to that size? Does your licensing scale to that size? Can your staff scale to that size without having to incur additional cost? Now, we look at that 3 to 5 year gap and say 10 terabytes, and most organizations believe that they can meet that challenge, maybe with some adjustments. But let's go another 3 to 5 years out. It's another 10 times growth. So now we're at 100 terabytes of data in your organization. So in the matter, in a short span of, let's say, 5 to maybe 10 years, but 6 or 8, let's say, can you sustain that growth? Can you still have your systems capture, aggregate, and support you in that growth? Not only that, we're also looking at a dynamic change in the type of data that we're talking about. Today, about 40% of the data in your organization is human generated. In other words, people are entering forms or filling out data. That's going to actually decrease, while what we call IoT or Internet of Things is going to increase substantially. So the amount of data that you're capturing is going to actually shift from human generated data to system or hardware generated data, where it's capturing things about movement of users, what they're doing, their habits, their activities. And not only that, we're also going to be adding to this at another massive growth is non-structured or non-traditional data, such as Twitter or Facebook or other platforms such as LinkedIn, where we're capturing data from what people are doing to analyze that data and merge it with our data sets, our data values, and really add to this at this explosive growth level. Well, how do we manage that? How do we capture that data and analyze it? And really, we need modern platforms, modern data platforms, to provide that gap for us or to provide that support for us.
Hey, Kevin?
Yes, sir.
Why would a company capture Twitter data? I mean, how is that useful?
Yeah, thanks, Dean. Social sentiment is huge today. You know, a lot of organizations are not properly aggregating that data to understand how customers are reacting to their product or whether or not customers have a negative opinion about something that an organization or a company has done, maybe in public eye, right? And that really affects their bottom line. And to be able to quickly analyze social sentiment with the data, with let's say sales data, and merge those together really provides that level of knowledge and insight that most organizations yeah. just don't have today.
In fact, as a quick plug for next week, we'll be going over exactly that process in our next week's session. But anyway, back to you, Kevin.
Thanks. So let's dive into the services that we feel are part of the modern data platform for organizations today. We're going to talk about, obviously, our traditional SQL, but in a way that's slightly different than what you might think of today. Things such as table storage, which is a massively scalable key value pair. It's not a SQL database. DocumentDB, which is a semi-structured but loosely coupled architecture. And then finally, we're going to talk into some of the bigger aspects of big data, which is HDInsight or in our case, Hadoop or Data Lake, Redis Cache or a high scale cache system, as well as to be able to search and aggregate this data easily. So your Azure SQL database is slightly different than your traditional SQL server in that it is a PaaS delivered platform. We talked earlier about how important PaaS is, or platform as a service, to be able to react quickly to market requirements, to be able to build and bring up new data sources easily, or new databases, as you will. When we're looking at Azure SQL, we're talking about a durable, guaranteed 99.99% uptime platform that allows you to stand up a database in a matter of minutes without having to worry about licensing, without having to worry about infrastructure, without having to worry about patching. And it's compatible with our SQL Server on-premises today. So even if you wanted to take an existing database that you have and move it to Azure SQL, you can do that. Now, we still offer virtual machines, so you can lift and shift your VM or your physical server to Azure as well, but getting away from having to focus on patching and updates and the traditional things we think of when we come to a SQL Server database, we can eliminate that here as well. And you'll notice we are fully compatible with SQL Server 2014. Now we just released SQL Server 2016, and I believe most of the updates are there so to be compatible with that, but anything prior to 2014 really does work here. So even if you have legacy hardware that you want to retire, you can look at SQL Azure as a way to modernize your data platform. In addition to that, then we start talking about some non-traditional SQL platforms. Azure Tables, or Azure, which is a NoSQL type platform, gives you the ability to scale out. Now, a lot of times we use SQL Server as kind of a key value pair lookup repository, maybe a very large scale, but really we're not using it necessarily to join data or provide any insight to data. We're really just looking at it to provide key values or lookups to key indices on some other data we have. The problem with that is we're now burdening our structured database with kind of non-structured workloads. With Azure Tables, we can actually take advantage of a very scalable, very durable, highly performant data storage that allows us to quickly access a number of data fields without having to worry about doing a schema or building out a data platform.
So Kev, on both of those, when you say Azure Database and Azure Tables, those are functions that are running in our Microsoft data centers, is that correct?
Yes, these are all Azure platform services. Yes, absolutely.
So Azure is the name of Microsoft's cloud services that we provide as a PaaS offering.
Correct, absolutely. So then we start to look at a little bit more of a NoSQL architecture. So we kind of looked at SQL, which is our traditional kind of, I won't say legacy, but legacy data platform. And then we start to look at table storage, which gives us the ability to store vast quantities and large amounts of data in a NoSQL format or a key value pair. And then we start looking at a loosely coupled data structure, which in the industry we now call NoSQL, the ability to query data quickly, easily, and at scale without having to worry about the traditional schema requirements of a traditional database. A lot of times when you look at databases, we have to spend so much time analyzing the data, looking at the schema, identifying what the schema of that data is and how it works, before we can even start ingesting data or bringing data into our system. In a NoSQL model, we start to look at bringing data in, semi-structured data, let's say JSON, XML, or even comma delimited, but typically we look at JSON data in this format. And bringing that JSON data in, being able to bring it in whatever structure it is, and then provide query capabilities and analysis on top of that without ever having to worry about a schema. What that means for an organization is that they can quickly adapt to new data formats and new data challenges without having to build and architect a schema, without having to implement a complex data structure or hierarchy, but just get the data in and with a SQL-like grammar, and this is important, the actual query capabilities against DocumentDB in our case, in Microsoft's case for NoSQL. There are others out there. MongoDB, as an example, is one of them. So you may have heard of Mongo. I just want to point that one out. But in the Azure case, in our PaaS platform, being able to have no infrastructure and provide a scalable, durable, guaranteed uptime and SLAs, and then provide this catalog of data and provide the ability for you to query that data when you need it and on demand is important to understanding just how valuable a NoSQL database is. Many organizations are gathering data now in JSON format. Mobile devices such as your phone or tablets, that's their more or less native communication language, let's say. So we're able to put that data into a store without having to convert it to SQL, without having to put it into a SQL database. Now, with SQL Server, for instance, we have the ability to actually join your NoSQL and SQL data using SQL Server and select that data together as one data set. So even for your SQL developers, they don't need to learn any new language, but they can aggregate data that's structured with the semi-structured NoSQL database and bring that out into one result set. So here's an example of just how DocumentDB looks. If for those of you who haven't looked at a NoSQL yet, your application may store or have data in a native JSON format. Well, that application can write directly to a NoSQL database like DocumentDB in whatever format it needs. And you'll see here we have a collection of data. This collection in this particular example has four documents. And you'll see they're slightly different. We have name, let's say, as a common in three of the four. The fourth one doesn't have a name. The fourth one, let's say, even has a last date, whereas the other ones have last use and first use. So you can see that even though the collection is one collection, the actual data might vary. And that's okay. This will not break a schema. This won't break the data model because it's a schemaless database, which allows us to be very flexible. So as an organization, if you wanted to change the data you're capturing from the application, this is important because traditionally you have to re-architect your database. You have to go through maybe a change request process that would prevent that data from actually being stored for quite a time. Or maybe having to re-ETL your data from an old format to a new format. All takes time and effort and a lot of overhead and management. Whereas with a NoSQL database, you can store it how it is and then still be able to query and get access to that data. So, yes, Dean. Yeah, as a matter of fact, I'll jump over. Thanks for that. I'll jump in over into a quick demo just to show how DocumentDB is done in our platform. So here is our Azure portal. The Azure portal is a place for you to spin up all of these services that we are mentioning here today. If you haven't seen it, you can go to portal.azure.com and sign up for a free account and start using it today. But I'm going to show you just how easy it is to stand up a PaaS service. In this case, we're going to look at DocumentDB or our NoSQL. So if I click New over here, I can try to find it in this list, which is categorized fairly easy. But let's just say I want to look at or search for DocumentDB. And you'll see Azure DocumentDB comes up. When I click on that, it'll give me those offerings for that. And right here we have a Microsoft Document DB. It gives us some related searches, including third parties that we support here. MongoDB is another NoSQL that you could use if you choose. But I'm going to go ahead and click on Azure DocumentDB. It's going to ask, it's going to tell me a little bit about the service and what it's capable of. If I just hit Create, then I'm able to give it just basic information. I have to give it a unique name. So let's try, this is our Azure demo for called DocumentDB. It'll tell me whether or not that's available. That one is not. So let's do Azure demo. Let's put some numbers in here, see if that works. No. All right, let me see if I can, let's do, Modern Data Platform Low 7. All right, that one worked. So it'll give you a check, green check box at the end here as soon as it lets you know it's available. Then you'll pick your subscription. If you have one or more subscriptions, they'll show up here. And then you need to create a resource group. Now, a resource group, just so you know, is a way to aggregate or collect the pool of resources that are necessary to manage a particular a group of services. In this case, DocumentDB. Now, DocumentDB is going to add a few things. It's going to create compute and network services as well as storage for the data. So it's going to group those all into what we call a resource group. With a resource group, then you're able to quickly remove or delete the entire resource group, which deletes all the underlying components, or be able to package up that resource group in a way that lets you move it from, let's say, dev, test, QA to production as a unit and be able to migrate it. So let's just give it a name, the Modern Data Platform 007 Resource Group. And it'll, again, give us a checkbox if it's good. And then where we're going to locate it. Now, you would typically locate it close to where you are for latency. But let's say you have multiple regions. You could actually deploy this in multiple regions simultaneously and be able to scale out with our multiple data centers. And then we can choose to pin it to the dashboard. At this point, we just hit Create. Now, this will take about probably less than 5 minutes to create. So I'm going to go ahead and do it. But while that's actually creating, you'll see I get some status up here. I've already created one, which is available right here. So I'm going to click into that to show you just what you get out of the box. So out of the box, you get a portal that lets you see what's going on, the ability to add new databases to the NoSQL database storage, the ability to explore the data from your portal right here. Without having to build an application or go into another tool. And you can actually query your data as well. So all from here, you have the ability to manage and view your data. You'll notice there's also the ability to monitor it. So we have monitoring that shows the number of requests per minute or per second, the ability to look at how much consumption of services you're using, and the ability to understand how you're throttling your data. So you can actually throttle your requests if you want to reduce it or add more. And then also look at your final quota. We mentioned earlier about scale. You can go into the properties or the settings of your portal and actually scale it out. So there's a number of capabilities within scaling. We don't have time today to go into all of them, but you'll notice right here we have the ability to do auditing and be able to understand if there's errors or security risks, and to be able to provide that audit to you. The ability to change your properties of your DocumentDB to scale up or scale down. There's a number of quick start, including sample code for your developers. Without them having to start from scratch, they can quickly go in and get data without writing a single line of code. The actual examples here, you'll notice we support just about every popular language today, including, of course, .NET, but Node.js, Python, Java, and even native Hadoop connections to our NoSQL. So very easily, we can stand up a NoSQL database in a matter of minutes and start leveraging it immediately in a production-ready format without having to do anything. So then we start looking at, went all the way back to the beginning. Apologize. Let me get back out of here. So then we start looking at Hadoop, and in this case, HBase, which is a layer on top of Hadoop. But Hadoop is an interesting platform. Hadoop was designed and developed by a number of organizations, including Microsoft, who has an input into the platform. But this platform is not just NoSQL. It does do NoSQL or schemaless like JSON or data formats, but really can run any data. So we start looking at even non-structured data or very loosely structured data, such as common delimited files or even binary data. Hadoop is keen to building a massive scale of data. So we talk about that explosion in growth and getting data quickly. You know, there's some challenges with Hadoop. I have some numbers to run over here. I'll put them up on the board for you, see if they help make sense a little bit more than just trying to speak to them. So when we take a look at Hadoop, a recent survey was done. So a number of enterprise organizations are actively implementing Hadoop in their organizations. Many of them are expressing a need for this NoSQL, this loosely structured or non-structured data capturing mechanism. There's a big challenge with Hadoop today for most organizations. First of all, cost. So although it's open source and technically free, there's still a number of costs involved between hardware, specialized expertise, having the right staff, and the support maintenance that usually enterprises have to pay to stand up any Hadoop infrastructure. The average cost, according to IDC recently, for a typical Hadoop implementation is $500K to about $800K just to start. So most organizations are looking at this $500,000 to $800,000 mark to get started with Hadoop. That includes everything from hardware and infrastructure, special networking, RAID arrays that they need to implement this infrastructure, as well as technical resources that can manage and maintain it. Now, that much investment, you would think, great, we're going to get some return on results. Those same organizations came back and said less than 4% of those organizations today are actually achieving any value from that. In other words, the 96% of the organizations are saying that they aren't realizing any value from this investment. Now, the reason why they're not realizing any value is not because the platform's not valuable. The platform is very valuable. Here was their number one problem. The number one problem was system availability. The systems are just not up and running. They aren't ready when they need them. They aren't scaling to the size they need. So although they're investing all of this money, their challenge is actually using it. Now, one of the things that I love about Azure is that our Hadoop instance, our HD Insight as we call it, is PaaS-based. There's no infrastructure to worry about. What that means for you as an organization is that you can stand up Hadoop in a matter of minutes. And again, let me show you just how easy that is. So as I transition back here to my Azure portal, let's go back to the homepage. I'm going to go ahead and hit New. Now, when I talk about Hadoop, there's so many factors involved with it. There's networking, specialized networking. There is data storage and RAID arrays that you need to worry about. One of the terms that is used quite heavily is JBOD, or just a bunch of disks, that can be leveraged. But speed of those drives and the ability for those for the back-end system of your Hadoop infrastructure to be able to support this data, this vast amount of data, is critical. And quite honestly, if you don't get it right at launch, it requires you to remove it all and rebuild it all. So even if you do something, you're using it for a while, you like what you get, but you start to run into limitations, the only real option for you at that point is to delete it, remove it, and start over again, which most organizations don't want to have to do. And then we start talking about the nodes. Most organizations look at 10 nodes to start with, or maybe even 100 nodes. So that's, when I say nodes, this is hardware, right? This is hardware that you have to build up and implement and make sure they're, the memory is there to support it and that the services are there and online. And those services are cumbersome at best to implement. So when we look at HD Insight, which I'll again do a search for, and I just do HD, and HD Insight pops up, I'm able to implement HD Insight as PaaS. So think about all of those things I mentioned: networking, hard drives, infrastructure, licensing, all of those items we don't have to worry about here. Not only that, with our HD Insight, you can scale up and scale down on demand. So a lot of organizations, when you think of the hardware you have to buy, that $500,000 to $800,000, you're just paying for the service as you need it. So let's say you have an analysis process that you do every week or every month or maybe every quarter. You can scale up your Hadoop for that particular period of time, what I like to call maybe a Black Friday event, and scale it up. And then when you're done, scale it back down. Or for our, in our particular case, you can turn it off completely and not lose the data. So you're not paying for any compute or any runtime services. You're just paying a nominal fee, a very small fee, to store the data. And then when you want to bring up your Hadoop, you spin it back up, you point to your existing data, and away you go and process. So when I look at HD Insight, it gives me a description of what it is. I have to give it a unique name, so let's do our modern data demo. Let's see if that's available. I should get a green here. It's thinking. There we go. I got green, which means I can use that name. Again, I'm going to pick the consumption or my subscription. So as an organization, you might have dev, test, and production subscriptions. And then I need to configure my initial cluster. Now I'm just going to use the standard. We have higher tier platforms as well. I got to let it think here for a second. So you'll notice that we have a preview, a premium, which has higher scalability, and that's available today. The other thing that I want to point out is that we can run Hadoop on both Linux and Windows. So if you prefer a Linux environment for your Hadoop, we can support that as well as Windows. Now, just to be clear, our HD Insight, implementation of Hadoop, is Hortonworks version of Hadoop. So we support that as our PaaS platform. So anything you've done in Hortonworks or anything that you may have in a Hortonworks platform can plug directly into our PaaS version of Hadoop, leveraging your Hortonworks infrastructure. But because Hadoop itself is an open source platform, just about any version of Hadoop you might be running on premises today can be ported over to our version. And there's a slight delay here. Let's see if I can kickstart this back up. I've already spun up an instance of it. Just to walk through this, so to be able to stand up this instance, we would just click our cluster size, which would be a standard or premium, we would give it some credentials, so our initial login credentials for access to it, and then where our data is stored. So we might have an existing repository, like I mentioned. So if we were standing up a Hadoop instance that we wanted to point to an existing set of HDFS or Hadoop data, we would just point to that. Or if we want to configure a completely new set of data, we could do that as well. And then finally give it, pick the number of nodes we want and the quantity and size. Once we've done that, once we've established that, then we would go back, and let me go back to the portal here. We would have our Hadoop up and running. Now, I set this up right before our presentation today to make sure we had it all. But you'll see, much like the document DB, we're presented with a portal that gives us quite a bit of information, including dashboards and the ability to view into our Hadoop clusters, our ability to understand what we're using. So now, in my particular case, I'm using 24 of my 25 cores that I've been allotted. You can have way more than that. This particular instance of Hadoop, or sorry, my particular subscription has a limit, but most organizations, enterprise organizations, have a much higher limit to thousands of cores, really. But you can see I'm using a very large amount of my cores, all but one. Now, if I wanted to, I could actually go back into here and hit scale, and this is just how easy it is to scale. Let's say I wanted to scale back down to 2. I didn't need it, or maybe even 1. I didn't want to leverage all my cores for right now, or I didn't need them for anything. Let's say I'm just pulling in data but not doing any analysis against that data. I can easily scale down by simply selecting what I want and hitting save. It'll automatically, in the back end, go through, reconfigure it without bringing my system down, without having me to do any infrastructure work to be able to support that. I can do the same the other way. I can scale back up, add more compute nodes, be able to scale that platform without impacting my runtime. So it's very easy to scale up and down. We manage all of the networking, all of the infrastructure, the performance of the data storage behind it, and ensure that you have that guaranteed uptime with the platform as well. So going back to that 4% of users that do not have or are not achieving any data value from their Hadoop infrastructure, we can easily provide that scalability, the durability, without having to worry about that. Now, even though this is running as PaaS in Azure, we can still allow you to gain access to that data with your on-premises databases. So in SQL Server 2016, for instance, we have a new feature that allows you to actually query your Hadoop data from SQL Server on-premises, and even if you're running this in the cloud, and join that with your structured data and bring result sets back that merge Hadoop data and structured SQL into one data set. And it allows you to take advantage of a key commodity in your organization that you already have, and that's your SQL developers.
Hey, Kevin.
Yes, sir.
So you're saying that, and I know right before the show we created that cluster, it was only about 10 minutes, right, to create that thing?
That's correct. It was about 10, 15 minutes to stand up the cluster as you saw, it was 24 cores of total data, yeah.
How long would a typical organization take to set up something like that on-premises if they had to do it on physical hardware?
Well, I have a real-world example for that.
Okay, I'll share that.
I actually had a customer not too long ago go through a, let's call it a POC, where they were testing HD Insight in Azure with Hortonworks Hadoop on-premises. And they did a comparison to see exactly what it would take to do that. Now, in their POC, they stood up one node. One node of Hadoop is fairly simple. It's just stand it up more or less. In a matter of a day or two, you can have it done. When they did that, they felt, well, we want to keep our data on premises. We're more comfortable with that right now. And they stood that up. And they decided that they were going to run it on premises. I went back and checked on them about 6 months later. And they said it was 6 months in, they still hadn't gotten all their nodes up. They were trying to stand up 100 nodes and optimize them. They were having challenges with keeping them running, keeping them optimized, keeping them available for their needs of analysis. And they also had to hire two full-time individuals at a very high rate to be able to maintain it and support it. So after 6 months, they still had not
And that's on premises,
production,
right?
Just to be clear. Yes, on premises.
Yeah.
I had not achieved a fully production environment. So whereas with HD Insight, I could have 100 nodes up and running in about 15, 20 minutes.
Wow. And we take, if I understand this right, Kevin, we take care of all the management of the hard drives, the networking, all that stuff for the customer, right?
Absolutely. You as a customer just worry about scaling to meet your needs. And on the back end, we manage all of that infrastructure to do that.
Now, you did mention a point there. How secure is my data if I put that up in Hadoop?
Yeah, absolutely. So we have a number of compliances with various organizations, ISO certifications, PII, HIPAA, et cetera. All of our data is secured in our data centers. You can find find out more about that at Microsoft.com/ I think it's Trust Center.
Trust Center,
yeah. So if you go to Microsoft.com/Trust Center, you can read all about the certifications we have, the security that we have, the ability that to have all your data always encrypted, whether it be at store, at rest, or in transit, is all there and available. You own the keys to your data, and securing that with your data. So at that respect, it's highly secure. It's probably the most secure platform on the planet today. So,
how about available, Kevin?
What was that?
How about data availability? Do I have to worry about a disaster taking out my data center?
Right. No. So as we mentioned earlier, with the Azure SQL, with DocumentDB, and with Hadoop, we have guaranteed SLAs at 4 nines, 99.99, on these platforms. So the availability of your data is you know, at 4 nines right now. That's what we guarantee. We actually are achieving a higher rate, but we guarantee the 4 nines.
Gotcha.
So in that respect, you know, you're getting a very scalable, very durable platform. And because our data is triple replicated in every data center, and give you the option to regionalize your data or replicate it in multiple regions, you know, there's no need to worry about backing up your data from the purpose of recovery. Obviously, backing up your data or having additional copies of your data for maybe historical purposes or looking at maybe snapshots of your data is still something you might want to do. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, your data is guaranteed, and the availability to that data is also guaranteed with 5 nines.
Great.
So Hadoop in the cloud, as I mentioned, is really a key differentiator for us in that you are able to scale, provide durability, have no hardware, no upfront hardware costs, and to pay for what you use when you need it. So I mentioned earlier the ability to turn off your Hadoop when you don't want it. Imagine spending that $800,000 over a period of time that might not even, you know, it might be 5 or more years before you spend that much money, versus standing up all that expense right now and not receiving any value for it. So it's a much better value proposition for organizations to leverage the PaaS, to be able to have that access to that data and that scalability and durability without having to pay for the infrastructure, hardware, or special resources to be able to manage it. So we believe Hadoop is built for the cloud. We also have in Azure another highly scalable, durable cache feature. Now, Redis Cache is another open source platform that's been around for a while. We fully support that as a PaaS offering now. It's a fairly new offering in Azure, but allows you to gain access to a highly scalable, highly durable cache system that, again, is open source, JSON-based, and gives you the access to quickly scale your data at an even higher scale, because we're using memory technologies to be able to do more performant data access. And that's a new feature in Azure we're very proud to offer. And finally, Azure Search. So we talk about all this data. We're aggregating data in DocumentDB and TableStore, Hadoop or HDFS, or Data Lake, as we'll talk about in later sessions. But how do we query that data in an easy fashion. Now, we can always put applications against all this data, build reports. We talked a lot about analyzing the data through various tools. But what if we want to just quickly search that data? Well, in Azure, we have the ability to index all of this vast amounts of data, whether it be structured, semi-structured, or non-structured in the case of HDFS and some data sources, and point to those data sources and be able to aggregate that data in a highly scalable, quickly online search mechanism. Not only can we provide that search mechanism and make that available immediately, but we also have an API to it. So with your applications, whether it be a mobile app or a traditional web-based portal or a client-server app, you can integrate those applications with the search and gain access and find data in your organization, these terabytes or even petabytes of data that you might have, and be able to quickly index and find that data. And that's another service we offer on top of this modern data platform to give you that ability to access and manage that data. So to review all of these services, obviously, this is what we believe is the modern data platform for organizations today. And to be able to do this without the restrictions of building infrastructure, with licensing, with hiring special resources and individuals within an organization to be able to manage and support it, we really believe that the cloud is where we can augment your on-premises services today and provide that agility to bring in, you know, non-traditional data sources, IoT, Twitter, various I guess, as you will, social media and inputs, and be able to aggregate that and bring it all together and then be able to analyze it. Now, when we talk about analysis, I'd like to end with one final piece, which is our Power BI. Now, when we have all of this data, when we have all this capability to aggregate and bring in data, the next challenge is visualizing it, being able to analyze it and provide insight into that data. It's one thing to have 100 terabytes or a petabyte or even a zettabyte of data. It's another thing to actually be able to leverage that data. One of our tools, one of many, including our Azure Machine Learning and our Stream Analytics, which allows for real-time streaming and visualization of data. We also have Power BI, which is offered today to you in both a free and premium version. So you can try it today at powerbi.com, and you can try that forever for free. There are limitations on it. But to quickly give you an idea, here we have some sales data that we captured. And maybe this is, for example, the example we had earlier, which is a pharmaceutical company trying to bring to market a particular drug. And they're trying to understand just how that marketing is going and how that sales pipeline looks. So you see right here we have a pipeline report, we have sales performance, and we're wanting to analyze that. Now, this is an online service. You don't have to stand up any infrastructure, and you can gain access to this immediately. If you have existing data, if, for instance, you go to our Get Data, and let's say you have a file that you have, an Excel file, it's a local file, you can quickly analyze that and start visualizing that just by clicking local file and bringing that in. Maybe you stored it in OneDrive or some other location, you could bring that in as well. And because it stays where it's stored, even if it's local, it's going to stay local or in my OneDrive, Power BI then goes in and views that data. So anytime that data gets updated, my dashboard will be refreshed. I don't have to worry about re-uploading a new dashboard or a new version of that data set to be able to get access to it. But going back to my portal here, go back to my workspaces, you'll see I have a lot of data. I can actually drill into this data. So let's say this variance target to sales. If I click on that, I actually drill down into the report behind it. Now, in that report, I have the ability to filter. I have pivot filtering, so I can just look at North America. And you'll see there's my sales in North America. All my other KPIs and dashboard visualizations also update to that. So if I unselect it, you'll see it goes right back. So I can filter. I can actually just click on a company, in this case, a region. So let me pick Germany. All my other dashboards, although I can see everything, they give me a comparison between what Germany has done to the rest of the world, in this case, global market. But let's say there's something in my dashboard. We always talk about the ability to do self-service BI. Let's just say there's something that's missing from here. There's something that I really need to find. So if I go back to my dashboard, notice up here I have the ability to ask a question of my data. This is very unique to our platform and our visualization. How do we allow organizations to analyze data when they may not have the dashboards built? They may not have already looked at the solutions or the data possibilities. Let's say somebody has an idea and they just want to quickly identify that. So I can just, in natural language English, say show revenue, and you'll see as I type, it actually tells me or it gives me clues as to how that data should look. Say by channel. So I happen to know that I have channels. If I click here, so now I've already visualized my data by channel. So I can see online, I've got a little bit over $30 million worth of revenue. Retail stores are approaching $40 million, but my big one is wholesale. I'm about $45 million in wholesale. Now, what if I wanted to know even more? What if I wanted to see what that data looks like by region? So I have multiple regions in my organization. So I can add to that and say, let's say by region. And again, it quickly shows me how my data looks by region without having to know my data model, without having to understand how my data is organized or where it's even located. I can actually get to that data, visualize it quickly, and then if I like this, if this is something that's important to me and I want to keep up to date on it, I can actually pin this visualization by clicking on pin visualization back to my, back to my dashboard. And then, didn't save it. Let me try that again. Hold on one more time. Show revenue division.
By revenue.
By region.
By region.
Thank you.
By region.
And then pin that visualization. I'm sorry, I didn't save it. Anyway, you get the idea. It'll pin back to the dashboard, and then it makes it available for me. When I go back to this dashboard, it'll show up right here and be available for my dashboard every time I log in.
Hey,
so there's some great capabilities from both aggregating data in the modern data platform and then ultimately visualizing and analyzing that data without having to do any infrastructure, without having to build a huge amount of data centers or even have to get the custom skills necessary to be able to implement any of this.
Hey, Kevin, a question came in. They're using Power BI, but they had a question about version control. Is that coming potentially?
Version control, I'm assuming maybe they're talking about version of the dashboards or versions of the...
It's not clear here, but...
there's no version control yet on the data sets or data models that you might be publishing. You can rename them or have different versions of the same data sets as a way to manage that today. The other thing you have to remember, we also have the ability to control access to that in Power BI. From an organizational perspective, you can control access to that data so that you're, only giving access to certain people within there. And if you have a newer version that you're testing out or working with, you can, once you are done analyzing that or building that data or that dashboard, then you can actually change it out and publish it back to those individuals and actually revoke access to the older version. So all that's not true version control. We have the ability to manage it that way.
Okay. So I guess if you had more questions, please reach out to maybe your local account rep or Microsoft team member that we can go into that. Well, that's natural language queries. Pretty amazing. I thought, Kevin, when you initially showed that to me, I thought those are pre-canned queries, but that's all on the fly being generated. Is that correct?
That's correct. It is 100% on the fly. It's using the power of our Azure machine learning to interpret your natural language query and put that against the existing data model and pull out the data as you want to see it. And as you notice, it even graphed it for me automatically. I can actually change those graphs on the fly as well, but all of that is there in the platform.
Great. Should we wrap up? I think we're nearing the top of the hour.
Yeah, absolutely.
So if there's any questions, please go ahead and type them in. I think we had a call to action slide. You want to throw that up?
Yep. Let's go ahead and pull that up. So next steps, if you'd like to learn more about the data platform, reach out to your local rep or your partner. And also, if you want to review this presentation or learn more about modern data platform, you can go to akams/dpplan. And finally, we have multiple videos online and available from this session will be posted shortly, as well as previous sessions. And also to learn about new sessions, you can go to akamsmtcstudio9. With that, I think we're done. Are there any more questions, Dean?
Yeah, I'm going to just watch it here. I guess a question did come in. Actually, a question came in earlier, Kevin, on the pricing on the Azure SQL and the Azure Tables and DocumentDB. Is there a way that, is that tiered or is that, how does that work?
Yeah, absolutely is. Depending on the tier and scale that you want to go, if you want to, you can go to azure.microsoft.com and you can click on pricing. Pricing is available for all of our services online. Depending on the service you want, you would click on it. So let's say SQL database, as an example, you can go in, you can understand, depending on your region, your currency, the size and scale of database you want, it'll give you an idea of just what that cost is per month, running 24/7, 365, of course. So depending on your scale and requirements.
Yeah, but I believe there's also a calculator, right, they can use
yes,
to estimate
out. Yes, there is a Azure calculator.
Azure calculator.
Yeah, it's a bit more intense. If you're just looking at a SQL database or particular services, you can just go to the pricing page.
Yeah, so that you can definitely tear it out. You only pay for what you use. I think that's a really key point, Kev, that you made. Like, for example, that Hadoop HD Insight, you don't have to spend that $800K up front to just try it out to see if it may work for you or not. In HD Insight, you can just spin it up and have it running and then decide to spin it down. There's a minimal initial upfront investment to get started.
There's really no initial upfront investment. As a matter of fact, when you first sign up to Azure, you get some money to spend for free.
I saw you can get a free trial for a couple days.
Absolutely.
Right?
Free trials are available. So you can start playing with Hadoop or DocumentDB or Azure SQL today. Without spending a dime. Or if you have MSDN, anybody has MSDN in their organization, you also get a credit every month towards Azure as well that you can spend on services for development and testing.
Yeah, the question came in. This recording is going to be made available shortly online at that aka.ms/mtcstudio9. We have all of our sessions up there online. And next week, you know, Kevin was talking about how do we use that social data and perform analysis on that. So one of my colleagues, Sean Gallagher, will be coming in and talking about that. Also, he'll be talking about how you can take this information and how you can get those leads, potential leads and prospects, and work them through a sales pipeline using an automated sales process. So he's going to take you through our tools to help with the sales productivity side of the business. So once you have those leads, how do you process them through? And that's with Sean Gallagher. But anyway, I wanted to thank everyone for coming this week. Hope you had an informative session. Again, this will be posted online. And if you want to get more details on how you can use any of these technologies for your specific application, please reach out to the person who invited you to this, either your Microsoft partner or Microsoft account rep, and we can set up a session here at the MTC to help you with that. With that, we're signing off and wanted to thank you. Have a great weekend, everyone. And thanks, Kevin.